You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, we are continuing in the summer school series, reading seminal texts from the child-centered theoretical model. And today I'm going to be reading a few things from the Practical Handbook for Building the Play Therapy Relationship by Giordano, Landreth, and Jones. So before we dive into that, I have a few housekeeping things and then we'll get to the text. So first and foremost, I wanted to let you all know that we have a couple spots left in the August group of the Play Therapy Professional Certification Program. So if you have been thinking about being a part of the coaching program, if you've been interested in setting up a discovery call with me, we have a few spots left. That cohort begins on August 19th, so we have a couple of weeks to go. If you have been wondering if it would be a good fit for you, please set up a discovery call. Go to playtherapypro.com and click on Get Certified, and you can set up the call there. Okay, housekeeping item number two. Back by popular demand, we are launching one last and final six-figure play therapist program. So for those of you that have not been around for a while, are not familiar with how the coaching programs have evolved, the six-figure play therapy program was a year-long program, and it combined child-centered play therapy skills with business acumen. So it was very focused on private practice, on making that profitable, as well as building child-centered skills so that you can provide for yourselves and your family and do what you love. I had a lot of people reach out and say that they wanted one but not the other. So we split those tracks, but I've now had people say, I really want both. So we're going to do one more round and we're going to take the content from it to create some on-demand training in the future. But if you are interested in the private practice coaching and the business coaching, as well as the child-centered play therapy training, then the six-figure program is probably for you. So more information to come on that. We are wanting to launch that mid-September. So we will keep you aware of what to do to express interest in that and get signed up for that. But that is going to be one final hurrah of a year-long coaching program for both tracks. Okay, and then last but not least, wanted to give you all an update. I was not given a booth at the APT convention in Atlanta this year. I'll keep my thoughts quiet on that. However, I am going, and I do want to make you all aware, for those of you who've been thinking about going or have already planned to go, I will be there. I am planning a big meetup on Friday evening. So that Friday, I don't know whether we're going to get a room in the hotel, we're going to get a restaurant, we're going to cop a squat around the pool deck. I have no idea, but I promise I'm working on it. Just know that I'm going to get all of my tribe's people together. So if you're a podcast listener, if you're a coaching participant, if you are a collective member, if you've ever heard of me, ever know anything about me, this is for you. I love you all. I promised y'all I'd be there. So although it will not be in a booth environment, I'm going to make sure that we have an opportunity to all get together. I'm probably going to do some live podcast episodes and I'll probably do some interviews. So who knows what's going to happen, but Friday and Saturday, I will be at the conference and more information to come on where those meetups will be and what that will look like. All right, housekeeping over. Let's get into the text. So again, I'm reading from A Practical Handbook for Building the Play Therapy Relationship, Giordano, Landreth, and Jones. So five goals of play therapy sessions are outlined in the beginning of this book. And I'm going to go through each of the five. And I found it so interesting that once you know child-centered theory, it's so evident why these are five goals and how you get there with use of specific tools. So you'll see what I mean as we go through these. So let's look at each one. So the first goal of play therapy sessions is to, number one, allow children through the medium of play to communicate thoughts, needs, and feelings. So when we understand that they're not going to communicate verbally, it's going to be through their play, and they will communicate thoughts, needs, and feelings. Sometimes in other texts, they reference wants and desires. So you might want to throw those in there as well. Communicate thoughts, needs, feelings, wants, and desires. But the goal is to allow children through their play to express those things. And this essentially means that they are having an experiential and emotional conversation with us. So we're not necessarily talking about these things, but we as play therapists in a child-centered playroom are experiencing these things, and we are connecting emotionally on these things. And what is the tool that allows us to most effectively do this? Our reflective responding. So as the child is behaving, speaking, or emoting, they are letting us a little window, a peek through the window of their thoughts, needs, feelings, wishes, and desires. So through the use of reflective responses, we are able to create an environment where that goal can be achieved. Okay, goal number two, to help children develop a more positive self-concept and more positive feelings of self-acceptance, self-respect, self-worth, and self-confidence. Let me read that again. To help children develop a more positive self-concept and more positive feelings of self-acceptance, self-respect, self-worth, and self-confidence. Okay. And when we understand that children will naturally start to think of themselves in more positive ways through the child-centered process, and a universal outcome is an increase in self-esteem, the way that we create an environment where this takes place is conveying the Be With attitudes. I'm sure you're all yelling them at me. You know my pop quizzes. I'm here. I hear you. I understand. I care. And I delight in you. So when we convey those five principles and attitudes to children, they naturally will develop positive feelings of self-acceptance, self-respect, self-worth, and self-confidence. Why? Because it's unconditional. I'm here, I hear you, I understand, I care, and I delight in you, no matter what your behavior is, no matter what you say, no matter how you feel, no matter what happens. So they develop a more positive self-concept. And the way that that takes place is our expression of the Be With attitudes. Okay, goal number three, to help children develop more self-direction, self-reliance, self-responsibility, and self-control. There's a lot of self words in these goals. Isn't that lovely? I'm just going to take a quick left turn here, but I promise it'll come back full circle. What other modality would have goals that have so many words that begin with self as a hyphenated expression? We've said self-concept, self-acceptance, self-respect, self-worth, self-confidence, self-direction, self-reliance, self-responsibility, self-control. Why? Because we believe in the child's inherent awareness of what they need to do for themselves, and it's child-directed, child-initiated, child-led. Why? Because it's self-actualization. We can't force a child to do any of these things. It's predicated on the notion that they will self-direct. They will self-heal. They will self-change. We could give them a worksheet, but that's us. That's Brenna. That's fill in the blank your name. That's therapist, that's adult, that's authority figure, that's teacher, that's coach, that's counselor. There's nothing self about that. But look at all the times that this says self in these goals. How delightful. Okay, I promised I would come back. I'm back. So number three, to help children develop more self-direction, self-reliance, self-responsibility, and self-control. And the skill that we use that creates the environment for that. Actually, this is kind of a combo. We limit set when needed and necessary. And otherwise, we provide choices. So there's kind of a hybrid here of choice giving and limit setting as far as the skills go. But because limits are only needed when they're needed, if we're not setting a limit, then we would be providing choices. And through the necessary limits, though few and far between, and through the opportunities that children have to make choices, they develop self-direction, self-reliance, self-responsibility, and self-control. Okay, goal number four, to assist children in learning to identify and express feelings. This one's probably the easiest of the bunch. I don't even probably have to go into this, but our skill and tool is to reflect the child's feelings. Notice how we're going through pillars here. We're going through tenets and foundational principles. We have reflective responses. We have be with attitudes. Now we're hitting the pillars. Y'all, this is the beauty of child-centered play therapy. There's framework. There's system. There's process. There's grounding. We know what we're supposed to do. And we know why. And we know the outcomes. This is the most freeing thing that we could do as therapists that work with children. You have a theoretical model that gives you everything you need. I don't understand why anyone would do anything else, but you know that I think that way. So, to assist children in learning to identify and express feelings, we reflect their feelings. That helps them to develop an emotional vocabulary. Because remember, it's a two-part process. They have to accurately identify their feeling first, and then they have to effectively communicate the feeling subsequently. So they have to identify and express them. That's what that says here. And they do that through an emotional vocabulary, which is built from us being able to reflect their feelings to them in sessions. All right, and then finally, fifth goal, to help children develop an internal source of evaluation and to become more trusting of self. There's our word again. To help children develop an internal source of evaluation and to become more trusting of self. How do we do that? Esteem building and encouragement. They have to trust themselves because someone tells them that they're capable. Someone expresses to them that they can feel competent. Someone communicates that they can have confidence in their own abilities. They learn to develop an internal source of evaluation because we're not praising them, we're encouraging them. And they become more trusting of self because we're building their self-esteem. All right, so very clearly to me, I looked at those five goals and I was like, oh my gosh, I can see how those are achieved by the use of specific skills. So I kind of added my own spin there. In the book, it only went over those five goals. I just added the way that you get there. Now, that's on page four. On page five, I want to read you two paragraphs and we'll kind of digest this together. A little bit of a pep talk, I suppose. Although words carry powerful messages, the attitude in which the words are communicated is equally important. Responses made in an interactive and conversational manner sound natural and genuine. The therapist's body posture, facial expressions, and tone of voice convey interest, warmth, and acceptance of the child. So let's look at a few of those components. Although words carry powerful messages, yes, of course, we don't do our jobs if we don't have the words to do so. So they do carry powerful messages. We just looked at five goals and we looked at how the skills that we're using allow those goals to develop in sessions for children. So yes, of course, words carry powerful messages. However, the attitude in which the words are communicated is equally as important. It is not just about the skills. It is not just about robotically spouting off what we're supposed to say when we're supposed to say it. Responses made in an interactive and conversational manner sound natural and genuine. We talk about the flow and the fluidity and the ease of sessions. Trust me, I've watched, thousands at this point, thousands of therapist play sessions. And you know what I see consistently across almost all of them early on? A robotic, stiff, awkward vibe in sessions, even if the skills are being appropriately used. Why? Because it's not natural and genuine in an interactive and conversational manner. It's use of skill, use of skill, use of skill, use of skill. But the attitude in which the words are communicated is equally as important. The therapist's body posture, facial expression, and tone of voice are what convey the interest, warmth, and acceptance of the child. That's why our personalities are a part of this. That's why how much we love kids comes out in sessions. Because it's us. It's our facial expressions and tone and posturing that convey the important things. Okay, and then the last paragraph, which I think is probably the most impactful. Understanding the rationale and wording of therapeutic responses will not produce a healing atmosphere. Wow. Understanding the rationale, why we do what we do. You know how much I care about the why. Understanding the rationale and wording. Do we need to know how the skills are to be worded? Absolutely. But understanding the rationale and the wording of the responses will not produce a healing atmosphere. Instead, a genuine, trusting, empathic relationship is the foundation from which, in quotes, the words, end quote, can empower and heal. All right, so that last sentence. The only way that the words that we use empower kids and heal kids is the genuine, trusting, empathic relationship that serves as the foundation upon which empowerment and healing can take place. So it's not the why, it's not the wording, it's not the skill, it is the relationship which is genuine, trusting, and empathic. And that is the foundation that allow the words that we say to create empowerment and healing for kids. So, moral of the story, and why this is a little pep talk for you, I hear so many of you be very hard on yourselves. I hear so many of you and watch so many of you and listen to so many of you comment on, I still have such a long way to go, and I still have so many things I need to improve, and I'm still not there yet, and I'm still not where I want to be, and there's so many things that I am still trying to figure out. And yes, as you should, as we all should, never stop learning, never stop growing, never stop honing skills. Always, always. If we stagnate, we die. So let's make sure that we're always trying to be the best child-centered play therapist that we can be. However, we cannot get so caught up in the words and the skills and the rationale and whether or not we had it exactly like the book says it, that we lose the fact that yet again, what's my favorite phrase about this whole thing? It's always about the relationship. And if there is a genuine, trusting, empathic relationship, that serves as the cornerstone. And then, and only then, the words empower and heal. So it's a combination. You getting that? Please let that settle into the depths of your soul. Please hear how important it is to remind yourselves that it is not the be-all, end-all if you say every single skill in an ideal manner. Because it is never the words, it's the attitude in which the words are communicated. And it's the relationship that is created. And it is the nonverbals that convey the acceptance. So prioritize that just as much as you prioritize your skills, because they both are equally important. We can't lose sight of that. All right, y'all, I'll end with that. Feel loved, feel encouraged, feel supported. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.